Engaging conversation on the most urgent problem of our day and what you can do about it.
Now, the End Abortion Podcast by Priests for Life.
Professor Carter Sneed, now he has been a friend and ally for a very long time in the battle for life, in the development of the culture of life. And let me just tell you a little bit about him, and then we'll hear directly from him in this important conversation. He is a professor of law at the University of Notre Dame Law School, and he directs the De Nicola Center for Ethics and Culture. Now, he is a highly respected author and speaker on bioethics issues in the public square, has advised the President's Commission on Bioethics as general counsel, has testified at numerous legislative hearings, has written countless articles and commentaries, and is just a trusted source for all of us in the pro-life movement and beyond for matters of law, of bioethics. And Carter, one of the things, of course, that you also oversee is the VITA Institute, a special training institute for people in the pro-life movement. I know many people who have gone through that and have been so enriched and strengthened to carry out this battle for life. So I really thank you for all that you do and have done and will continue to do for us. And welcome to our program today.
Great. It's wonderful to join you. Thanks for having me on.
Well, we wanted to talk to you today for many reasons, but the first of which, of course, that has brought you many interview requests during these days is that you are and have been a colleague of Amy Coney Barrett, who, of course, now is serving on the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals as a federal judge and who has been nominated by President Trump for the Supreme Court. Tell us, if you would, about her, what you know, how sure. You know her on a personal level, and what insight can you give us into Amy Coney Barrett as a woman?
Absolutely. I met Judge Barrett 16 years ago when I was interviewing for a job here at Notre Dame, and we've become wonderful friends. We've been friends and colleagues for over 15 years. Her family and our family are close. Our kids, we have kids roughly the same age, and we've spent a lot of time with the Barretts, and they're an amazing family. And Judge Barrett is an extraordinary person. She is obviously brilliant. She's so brilliant that she's captured the attention of a lot of folks who are used to dealing with brilliant people, but she exceeds even the standards that they're used to seeing. But the most important thing about Judge Barrett is that as brilliant as she is equally kind and generous and warm and just a fantastic person. So selfless and generous. She's one of the most special people you'll ever meet in your entire life.
It is certainly wonderful to hear the good things that are being said about her from across the ideological spectrum. That's one of the things that has impressed me, not only in these recent days, but from the time in 2017 when she was nominated and confirmed for the Court of Appeals, that people across the ideological spectrum acknowledge her brilliance and also her ability to do the work of a judge. And we'll talk a little bit more about that and her judicial philosophy. But tell me also, in terms of her personal life, tell me a little bit about her family. She's the mother of seven, is that right?
She is. She has seven beautiful kids, including two children that she and Jesse adopted from Haiti. And her youngest, Benjamin, has special needs. He has Down syndrome. And he is the light of the whole family. As Judge Barrett said on the White House lawn, in the Rose Garden, rather, she said that Benjamin is the consensus favorite sibling among all the kids. He brings joy. And anybody who's known families with the gift of a child with Down syndrome know that it's like having an angel in your family. I mean, it's just a beautiful gift. And that's something that I think is really animates them as a family. And we used to go to the same parish. Our family moved to a little bit further outside of town. But we were parishioners of St. Joe Catholic Church, which is a wonderful parish. Kevin Russo, Father Kevin Russo, CSC, is the pastor. And Amy is, again, a brilliant teacher. She's been recognized three times by the student body as Teacher of the Year, which I think is a record. She's obviously published in the very finest and most elite law journals. She's a respected judge. And as you said, she really commands the respect and affection of people, no matter what their ideology is, which is a very rare thing in today's politics and today's country.
She, of course, is a practicing Catholic, and her Catholicism has generated a lot of attention. Tell me about that aspect of her life. She involved in the church more than simply going to Mass?
Yes, she is involved. I mean, she was very much involved in the kids in church, and she's performed service, and she, you know, it's Notre Dame Law School community is a very tight-knit group of folks, and we are all deeply committed to one another, both socially, and we have a lot of fun together, but we also do a lot of, even the work of the University of Notre Dame Law School itself is part of the church. I mean, we take our role as the nation's most important Catholic university, and the law school within that is, we take it very seriously. That's a kind of mission that we all have to embrace and support. And the work of the law school, Judge Barrett has contributed to the work of the law school in teaching, scholarship, and service in a way that almost no one else has.
Well, friends, if you're just joining us, we're talking with Professor Carter Sneed, University of Notre Dame law professor, a distinguished expert on public policy and bioethics, and a colleague and friend of Judge Amy Coney Barrett. Let's talk about a little bit this question of judicial philosophy. As you know, Carter, so many people on the left or just secular people in our culture cannot understand how a devout and practicing Catholic who embraces what the church teaches, as she does, can at the same time be objective if they are put on the federal court. We remember in her hearings 3 years ago for her confirmation, the implication, not so subtle, from the Senate Democrats that, you're the dogma lives loudly within right. You. You're a practicing Catholic, so we're not so sure, if you should be confirmed to the court. How does she view the relationship between adhering to the Catholic faith and adhering to the Constitution?
Sure, it's a really wonderful question. And what I'm coming to realize in the disputes here is that basically the disagreement is about a disagreement of what a judge is supposed to be. And as you say, friends on the left make criticism of conservative judges saying, literally people now are saying, Judge Barrett will take away your health care. Well, it's not the role of a judge to take away health care or to give health care. The role of a judge is to interpret the Constitution and to interpret statutes. And it's the work of the political branches to operate in at that level of public policy. I've received emails from nice people, friends, Catholics on the left, who have come to me and said, I'm worried. I understand Judge Barrett's a nice person, but I'm worried that she's going to take away our health care, or she's not going to protect immigrants, or she's not. And what I try to say is I think that reflects a fundamental misunderstanding of what a judge is supposed to do. Our government is structured in a way that the political branches are supposed to do that work, and judges are supposed to be dispassionate and objective. And as Judge Barrett has said, she is in the mold of her mentor, Justice Scalia, a faithful Catholic, but also one who regarded his job as to single-mindedly focus on the question of what the original understanding of the Constitution is, originally understood at the time of its ratification, because that's what a constitution is. It's supposed to be a bulwark against political whims and changes. It's the political branches at the statutory level that can make changes, but it's supposed to be hard to change a constitution. It defines our government. It sets forth the structures, puts them in place. And Judge Barrett is committed to that vision of being a judge. And she testified under oath in 2017. And she reaffirmed this again in her remarks in the Rose Garden, that she believes that it's the role of a judge to table all of their personal views, all of their ideology, all their political preferences, all of their policy preferences, and all of their religious views, and do the work of a judge. Because if a judge is just another politician, we should just add 9 seats to the Senate and get rid of the Supreme Court.
Right. Well, I remember you mentioned Justice Scalia, for whom she clerked, and I remember being in a room at the Supreme Court with a group that we had brought to hear a talk from him years ago. And I'll never forget that one of the gentlemen in the group who asked him a question about Roe versus Wade and abortion policy. Part of his answer was, you want to change policy on abortion. And then he looked out the window and he pointed his finger. He says, you go to the building across the street. You go to the Congress. They make the laws. Don't look to me. I'm not supposed to be changing public policy. And I noticed Kamala Harris the other day saying, specifically about Roe v. Wade. Oh, you know, a Justice Barrett would undo the work of Justice Ginsburg and take away the woman's right to choose abortion. Oh, this is terrible. And again, just like you're saying, this represents such a profound and erroneous misunderstanding of the role of the courts. And it looks like, I mean, we know President Trump has been putting judges onto the federal courts and looking for judges who say, no, that's not our role. Our role is to judge cases in the light of the Constitution and the laws as they are written. How does her judicial decisions so far, I mean, she's been serving mm-hmm. on the federal courts already in the Seventh Circuit. Can you tell us something about what her decisions have been so far, or maybe articles that she has written in the past convey this proper understanding of the court?
Absolutely. No, I mean, as a scholar, she has written about this. There's a wonderful piece in the Texas Law Review about the role of stare decisis in originalism. There's a shorter, less detailed piece in the Notre Dame Law Review in 2017 about originalism and stare decisis and all the different complexities that one has to consider as a justice on the court. And it's largely a retrospective on Justice Scalia and his approach, but it does include insights into her own thinking about stare decisis and its relationship to originalism. Because what you have between a stare decisis, for your viewers who don't know, I bet a lot of them do know, but for those who don't, is a prudential doctrine that applies to judges and justices that invites them but doesn't require them to consider the practical consequences of overturning an erroneous prior precedent. Okay. And when people watch the hearings that will happen starting October 12th, there's going to be a lot of discussion, a lot of questions to Justice Barrett about stare decisis, because defenders of Roe v. Wade, in some ways, it seems to me at least, have given up on the proposition that the 14th Amendment actually is originally understood or it has anything to do with abortion at all. Mm-hmm. And they've stopped defending Roe v. Wade and Planned Parenthood versus Casey as a constitutional matter, and they've shifted gears to focus on the question of stare decisis, which would, and their argument is something like this. They say, well, even if it was wrongly decided in the first instance, wouldn't it be so disruptive to undo Roe and Casey? Wouldn't it disrupt the reliance interests of women who have built their lives around the right to abortion? Wouldn't it result in doctrinal instability? And that's the tension, right? The tension between the rule of law and fidelity to the Constitution on the one hand versus practical considerations about the social consequences and the doctrinal consequences of undoing prior precedents. And I think Judge Barrett has written on these questions, and folks should have a look. And what I think those writings show is what you have is a judge that really appreciates the complexity of that relationship, the judge mm-hmm. that really appreciates all of the nuances and all of the questions that one has to ask, and also a judge that recognizes that there are other sources of stability available to a judge besides stare decisis. It's not the only source of stability that have to do with some pretty technical doctrinal principles. But what I see is an unbelievably careful person, a thoughtful person, an open-minded person, a wise person. And that's really, those are the virtues of a judge. That's what you want in a judge and justice of the Supreme Court. And the fact that she's such an extraordinary human being makes it really the perfect pick. I can't think of a better appointment to the U.S. Supreme Court in my lifetime or perhaps ever.
It really is exciting. Of course, her name has been on President Trump's list, and he deserves praise for that kind of transparency that he has introduced into the nomination process. It's like, hey, if you don't like the kind of judges I would nominate, don't vote for me. You know, right. Here it is, laying out right in the open. I wonder how, I don't know if you can provide any insight on this, but I mean, even just to have your name published on a list like that before she was selected, I mean, that must generate quite a sense of awe and perhaps surprise and conversation with somebody, say, hey, you might be on the Supreme Court before long.
It's very strange. My wife and I were talking about this. We had the great honor of being in the Rose Garden for the announcement. About 20 of us from Notre Dame Law School went to that event, including Father Jenkins and the dean of our law school went to that event. And were honored. But the weirdest thing of all is that when Judge Barrett came out and gave her remarks, it was really just our friend up there speaking calmly and humanely. And I've seen a lot of people speak on very, very high profile stages with very high stakes. And I've never seen anyone as calm and centered as Judge Barrett was. And my wife commented, she said, it's so strange to know someone before they become so famous and important. I mean, we've met a lot of Supreme Court justices, but to have a very dear friend who you knew before that was even on anyone's radar screen ascend to this level is surreal, but it's also wonderful.
You know, Carter, a lot of people, and for those that are just joining us, we're with Professor Carter Snead, a colleague of Judge Amy Coney Barrett there at the University of Notre Dame Law School for many years, and has known her and her family. And we're discussing her now as the new nominee for the Supreme Court. Carter, many people are praying for her now very, very intensively because they're concerned about having seen the way that Senate Democrats treated Brett Kavanaugh just a very short time ago, with that confirmation process that they turned into a sham. They turned it into a national disgrace. And, you know, people look at Judge Barrett and say, you know, she's such a gracious person, a mother of seven. You know, what can they possibly do, you know, to attack her? But and yet we know that there will be attacks. Walk us through what you expect to happen in these next few weeks. What is she doing now to prepare? I know right. there's a whole process that has gotten underway now.
Yeah, she's meeting with the U.S. senators. I saw this morning that she was traveling to Capitol Hill to meet with the senators. These are brief meetings where they kind of get to know one another. Senators who have specific questions will ask those questions, and if they have particular concerns or priorities, they'll be raised at that time. But it's basically a kind of getting to know you experience. I was disappointed to see that some of the Senate Democrats, including the minority leader Chuck Schumer, are refusing to meet with her at all, based on the demonstrable falsehood that she said she will vote to overturn the Affordable Care Act. That's simply a complete mischaracterization of her words, and really, honestly, a serious disappointment that a public figure would make those comments. But she's sitting down with those folks, and then October 12th, the Judiciary Committee, which is a committee in the U.S. Senate, will have hearings, and there'll be questioning from the majority side and the minority side, and. And it's at that time that we really should be watching carefully, because in 2017, there were some very ugly, I would say, openly anti-Catholic things said in that meeting, not just by Dianne Feinstein, the very famous "Dogma Lives Loudly" comment, but Dick Durbin interrogated Judge Barrett, then Professor Barrett, about whether or not she was an Orthodox Catholic, asking very strange questions that you would never ask anybody. I mean, it reminded me of, you know, the old days with the know-nothings and anti-Catholic bigotry and, you know, do you have dual loyalties? I mean, how do we, it's really shameful. And I hope that the Democrats learned their lesson last time, because in many ways, that mistreatment, that unfairness elevated Judge Coney Barrett's status to a national level, and she's become a kind of icon for Catholic people, especially Catholic moms who see someone that they can relate to being mistreated in such a terrible way. And Judge Barrett's personality is so winning that they're going to be in trouble, I think, if they do that, but they may not be able to help themselves.
They may not be able to help themselves is right. Remind us, Carter, of what the Constitution says about religious tests for public office.
It couldn't be more straightforward. It forbids them. You cannot. There are no religious tests for office. And, you know, we have, and again, this came up in Justice Alito's hearings and Chief Justice Roberts. I mean, we have a lot of Catholics on the court right now. And it came up in almost all of them. It didn't come up with Justice Sotomayor, and it didn't really come up with Justice Gorsuch, because even though he was baptized Catholic, he practices in, I think, the Anglican Church, although I'm not sure about that. But it certainly comes up anytime you have a Catholic. The question becomes, well, are you going to take your marching orders from the Pope? There was a very funny Babylon Bee yesterday that said Judge Barrett communicates with holographic Pope and to tell her to do his bidding. It was very, very funny. I mean, there's all kinds of very funny means. And I have to say, one valuable tool that one has is laughter and just to make fun of this silliness. But But I, you know, the bottom line is when a person is a person of faith, and especially a Catholic person whose church is, you know, so engaged in these social questions that are controversial, these are the kind of questions you get. These are the kinds of accusations you get. And I have to say, I wrote a pretty mild piece in the Washington Post defending Judge Barrett in terms of the virtues of a judge: honesty, integrity, open-mindedness, fairness. And I've been receiving emails that have been disgustingly anti-Catholic, yes, using words that I would never repeat on your show.
What should people be doing? You know, they see this process unfolding. What are some of the practical things our viewers should do now to support not only Judge Barrett herself, but a fair and swift confirmation process?
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head a second ago, Father Pavone. I think prayer is absolutely essential here. We need to pray for Judge Barrett. We need to pray for her family and her children as these attacks unfold, with her children who are old enough to understand what's happening to their mom and what's being said about them. She would be the first justice on the court, first woman justice to have school-age children. We have to pray for the senators to be courageous, because there will be temptations to abandon her, I'm sure, at certain points of the process. And if people want to become engaged, I highly recommend that they reach out to their senators and to express their strong support of Judge Barrett, and to make it clear that they won't stand for these unfair and unjust attacks. Write op-eds, write letters to the editor, call your senator, and, you know, express yourself, express your support for Judge Barrett, and especially in the face of unfair attacks on her faith and her character.
Well, I'm sure that many of our viewers are going to do exactly that, and I thank you for your encouragement and insight, both into the process and into the person of Judge Amy Coney Barrett. Carter, how can people connect and get to know better your own work?
Absolutely. So, I would encourage people to go to our website, ethicscenter.nd.edu, to visit the DeNicola Center for Ethics and Culture, which I serve as a director. Our mission is to support the university in the Catholic mission on campus through student formation and faculty hiring and culture of life work, as well as research and publications. And please go to that website. And for myself, I actually have a book coming out on October 13th called What It Means to Be Human: The Case for the Body in Public Bioethics. Will be coming out from Harvard University Press October 13th and is available for pre-order now. Again, it is What It Means to Be Human: The Case for the Body in Public Bioethics. And it has chapters that I think would be of great interest to your viewers. There's a chapter on abortion, there's a chapter on assisted reproduction, and there's a chapter on end-of-life decision-making, including assisted suicide.
Well, we very much look forward to that book, and I look forward to keeping in touch with you as this process unfolds, and to being together with you again very soon.
Thank you,
person.
Father. God
Professor
bless you,
Carter
your
Sneed.
Thank you.
Thank you for being on the program today and for all that you do.
This has been the End Abortion Podcast. To learn more, to help end abortion, and to connect with us on social media, visit endabortion.net.